This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're talking with the rising star of British athletics, Georgia Bell, about her incredible running journey. And it is incredible.
It is incredible. I mean, we say that quite a lot about everyone's running journeys, but...
I know you mean mediocre running journey.
Bang average running journey. But this is, yeah, this has got twists and tails, you know, twists and turns in this.
It has.
Very good, didn't run for ages, very good again. And why did that happen? Why are you just going to have to listen?
You're going to have to listen. It's excellent. And obviously, we've got an exciting year of athletics, haven't we, with Paris 2024 coming up. So there's lots of good stories knocking around.
Lots of good stories... This is a good one. I don't think we need any more intro than that.
No, I think we should just... I think enough about me and you. How's your running? Is it good?
Yeah, good.
You're a good 1500 metre star, are you? Rising on...
Yeah. Are you better than... Yeah, no.
You're better than Georgie Bell? No, you're not.
So just be quiet.
Bring it on. Okay,
right, guest perfect. Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete.
Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown. Georgia Bell, welcome to the Runner's World podcast. Thanks very much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
It's been obviously an amazing couple of years for you, but you were actually an outstanding junior runner, weren't you? Can you give us a sense of like how you first got into running and some of the early highlights?
Yep. So first got into running just through sports day, beat all the boys at school. And one of the parents was like, better get her down to you. A running club, and then went into the kind of club system that you have in the UK with athletics, so like Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday training. Had some good success as a junior. Probably highlights were things like winning English schools. I think I was 14 then, and just being a top ranked 800 meter athlete for under 15s and under 17s. So those were the glory days.
And the sort of trajectory for you was like to become a... Was it looked like you were going to become a kind of star athlete? Was that kind of what was expected?
I think so. I think like if when you do something quite young and kind of everyone sees that you're quite good at it, and you kind of think of yourself as like, oh, this is kind of my identity now, and I'm going to go on to continue in this trajectory. Hit my teenage years, and I think either everyone else caught up, or I just stopped kind of doing so well at that level and there being such difference. So I definitely thought I was going to be, running was going to be part of my life forever, but obviously I had a big break.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to come back now.
Before we get into the comeback, the incredible comeback, what's it like when you're that age and there's quite a lot of expectation? Because we talk about junior athletes and how they progress and how people progress with them. And Lauren Fleshman talks a lot in her book about especially young female athletes and how the sort of the treatment of them and how they're positioned against male athletes and considered when they're at their best and all these sorts of elements. What's it like then when you're sort of at that level and you see, you know, changes happening, puberty, all of the things that impact performance for a young person, and then there's this pressure of everyone going, oh, she's going to be the next best thing?
Yeah, I think it is strange. On the one hand, I think it's really great for young athletes to be good at sport because it just gives you a level of kind of confidence I think has really impacted other parts of my life, like work, relationships, and for that reason I think it's really good for young people to get into sport and excel at that. But obviously, yeah, once you start performing well, once you've won a championship, if you don't win that championship every time, then that's a kind of downgrade. So it is a lot to adjust to, and then obviously bodies change, like your performance can change along with that. It's a different experience, I think, especially for women versus men. So I think you have to be kind of quite mature, and for a lot of people that's hard because it's at the age where you're probably your most immature and going through the biggest changes in your teens. It's a lot.
And you went over to the University of Berkeley, right, in California. But I understand that you were kind of quite frequently injured and fell out of love with the sport. Like, what went wrong at Berkeley, and what have you learned through that process?
Yeah, so I think Berkeley was amazing for what I wanted it for, in terms of I wanted to live abroad, I wanted to experience the NCAA, which is an amazing league that they have out there. It basically feels like you're a pro athlete. But you're living in California, you're training with your friends. But the trade-off is that they expect you to race all the time because you are a business deal.
Okay.
Right. So whereas in the UK, you might say, oh, I'm feeling a bit, you know, like shins are a bit sore, like I'm probably not going to, I'll give this one a miss this weekend. Over there, it's like, no, you're here for 2 years. We're paying a lot of money for you. Like, you will race all the time. And that's kind of what happened over there. They wanted me to peak for every season and race every season. So cross country, indoor and outdoor. And I basically did well in cross country and then was injured for the bit that I actually wanted, which is indoor and outdoor. So I was just forever coming back from injury. And that was the times where it was going well, it was great, but I never ran faster than I did in the UK. So from a running perspective, you know, obviously not an improvement. And I think I just learned from that experience that high mileage isn't everything. It was a very high mileage philosophy out there. And it was just kind of like crack on, do as much running as you can and sink or swim. And for me, kind of sank.
Yeah, that's very strange. I hadn't really considered that, it being a business deal.
Yeah.
That side of that life. Like, and we see you out there on a scholarship. Is that what?
Yeah, exactly. So like, I'm sure you guys know as well that American scholarships, like we think the UK is expensive for university. Over there, it's like 50K a year. So it's like 200K if you go as an undergrad. I went as for a master's student for 2 years. So it's still the best part of 100K.
Wow.
So, you know, I actually understand why they're like, look, we really would love you to race like as much as you can.
Yeah.
If you're going to be here for this period of time. And that's why a lot of British runners who are really good don't go to America, because it's kind of got that reputation that you will get injured, you will have to race a lot. If you're trying to go for that kind of Olympic level, best to stay in the UK, have a more personalised programme. But obviously it's a very different experience.
Yeah, it hasn't quite got the same kind of sunshine and of California, I say, but there you go. It's not everything. When you kind of... when you actually kind of stopped running, did you think, that's me and running, like we're done, basically? I'm not going to be starting.
Yeah, I thought
again.
I was done. Yeah, I thought I'd be one of those people that like would do a marathon when I was 50 or something and be like, I used to run back in the day.
I really
thought I wouldn't again. Racing had just gone on such a downward trajectory for me. So like when I finished my last race, I was like, I can't. I'm so happy that now I'm done. I'm ready to just be like a normal person, go into the working world. I think I didn't run at all for a year, didn't go on a run, just completely stopped. And then I think, you know, after that, I might have gone for like the odd run, like once in a while, if someone wanted to go for one. But like, I had completely fallen out of love with it.
Yeah.
And I guess you were racing the same distance then. You were still doing, 1500 was your main...
Yeah, 1500 and 800s I was doing, yeah.
So the idea of just, in your training, you weren't going and doing a casual 10K anyway. So really...
No.
So it wasn't... Yeah, it's not really like you switched allegiances and started like considering going distance or anything like that.
No. I was just completely done when I stopped, and I was like, yeah, it's just time to be a normal person.
Did you then, as an active person, because I feel like if you didn't do anything, you'd probably, like all of us, slowly go sort of mad with frustration if you don't move. What did you switch running for then?
So I switched running for normal life. I actually went the opposite way for like a year. So like everything changed. Like I looked a little bit different, gained a little bit of weight, and just like took advantage of, you know, just I went straight working into my... I was working in my first job in San Francisco when I finished.
Yeah.
So I was living a really fun life. I was traveling all over the US and just, you know, all the things that you had to say no to previously because you're racing or you're training. Mm. I was just like, yeah, we can go away for this weekend. We can go to Coachella. We can do whatever. Yeah. So all of the fun stuff. So I actually really enjoyed it for a year. And then I think slowly I was like, okay, probably need to start, you know, everyone needs to do exercise and be healthy. So I started to kind of work it back in with just kind of some classes. And yeah, as I say, then the odd run. And then when I moved back over to the UK, that's when I got into cycling, which is still a big part of my training. And I think was a big part of coming back to fitness again.
So let's talk about the comeback then, because my understanding mm-hmm. is that it was like a very decent park run result, and you were like, hang on a second, actually, I might not be done here. I've still got something to offer the sport. So can you tell us about that?
Yeah, exactly. So I think with COVID and everything, when running and exercise was pretty much the only thing you could do, that's when I started to train a lot harder, started to go for runs, but I'd got that kind of competitive side back again. Like I wasn't just going for a plod. I was like, okay, let's see how hard I can go for 2 miles, 3 miles, or do some tempos, that kind of thing. And then park run, so accessible. I just thought I'd hop into a park run, had a few friends doing it. And I think I did like a 16:10 or something park run in Bushy Park. And I thought, yeah, that's actually okay. And that was the point where I said, I'm actually in decent shape. I might dabble with getting back on the track, and signed up to my first track race. So I'm actually doing that track race tomorrow.
Amazing. What was it?
And it's so weird. It's called the Comeback 5000.
It was like
it was made for me.
Yeah, right.
So I did it 2 years ago tomorrow. And that was literally like my first comeback race. The first time I stepped on a track, and I was just like, after that, I was like, oh, I've missed this feeling. Definitely ready to get back into racing again. Things have escalated since then.
Amazing. So.
How did you then build up? Because, I mean, most people wouldn't consider even like that step back onto the track after having done it for so many years. Had you got into a coach at that point, or were you completely just under your own steam, kind of knew what you had to do?
Yeah,
we'll talk about the cycling in a minute, but maybe you'd got like a really good base fitness and the running had crept back in. But most people would consider like, well, this has got to be dedicated and I've got to. Were you just like, well, see,
it was strange because, yeah, I was coachless. I just knew that this track race, this Comeback 5000 Battersea, was right by my house. Mm. I still had loads of friends in running, so I had friends who were doing it. And they just bought a pair of spikes for me. And because I've just done so many years of like warming up, like all that stuff, like I knew how to warm up for a track race, although it was really weird. That would have been 5 years since I'd stepped on a track. But I just thought it's a new distance for me. I'd never done a 5K on a track. So I just thought whatever it is will be my best that I've ever done. I'll just try and slot in behind some people. And, you know, if I can do a 16:08 or 16:10 on the road, then I should just be able, it should feel easier on a track. I don't know if that's the case. It's actually really hard on track. But I just kind of went out on a whim and I just said, what's the worst that can happen?
What did you run out of interest?
I ran 16:08.
Okay,
And then last year in a 5K, I did 15:39 on the track, and then tomorrow let's see what I do.
Amazing.
I'll drop you guys a message.
Let us know.
I'm invested now.
So you get back in touch with Trevor Painter, right? And my understanding is that he said that you were the one that got away. He always thought that you were going to be a great runner, and it hadn't happened at that point. So what was that?
Yeah.
What was that phone call like? And what's the relationship been going? You know, since then, 'cause it sounds like it's been a huge success.
Yeah, so it was really strange. So Trevor was coaching me when I was running my best in England. So he got me from like a 208 runner to a 203 within 6 months for the 800. And it was combining with my time that I was graduating from university. And I just said, look, I want to go to the US. And he was kind of like, he was like, I'll support you if that's what you want to do. But I think we could get you to be such a great runner if you stayed here. And then obviously I went off. I had a good life, but then stopped running totally. We kind of stayed vaguely in contact just for big life events, like when he had his daughter and things like that. But then after that comeback 5000 race, I did a couple more races that summer, like British Milers Club races. And I kind of just sent him a message and said, look, I've kind of got back into running. Here's what I've done this summer, just on my own, not following a plan. You know, what do you think about us working together again? And obviously knew he had done amazing work with Keely, Dara Healy, all of the athletes in that group who have just gone, like, just running incredibly. And luckily he was just like, yeah, great, it would be great to have you back. And just been going really well. I've just got back from 3 weeks in South Africa with them, where, you know, when you're out on camp, it is like eat, sleep, train, repeat.
Right.
It's going really well. I think they've got the best program ever for training, but I also just think they're just a great team, him and Jenny, his wife, who was an athlete. So, yeah, very happy that he took my call.
Yeah, that's great.
Come back.
How does it work? How does it work then with sponsorship and things like that now when you're making the comeback and you've got Trevor and Jenny and, you know, you've got results? Are you then, is it England Athletics, is it GB that kind of align you with someone, or do brands approach you? Like, how do you come back into that world?
Yeah, so I was really naive to all of that because I just had been out of it for so long and never really did it at a professional level. Like, I did it at a collegiate level of the university in the US. But it's even just stuff like, I wanted to get into races and they said, well, you need an agent that's going to get you into races.
Right,
you can't just rock up and hope for the best. Like, so they got me in contact with an agent. And then from there, after I started running well earlier this year, and because Trevor is a Nike coach, Keely's a Nike athlete, that's how I managed to sign with Nike earlier this year and on a contract with them because of the results and the relationship that they had. But yeah, I was naive to all of that. And I wasn't expecting that I would be able to get any kind of sponsorship. But obviously, the results of, especially the indoors, is what changed it. Just since January, everything's changed very quickly.
I was going to mention cycling again because I love cycling, so I wanted to talk to you about it. But let's talk about indoor quickly just because you've mentioned it. Has indoor always attracted you? Is that what you were racing? You mentioned cross country, obviously, but were you racing a lot of indoor when you were junior? Or what is it about indoor racing that, I mean, you've obviously hit some form, but there's obviously an attraction to the indoor scene.
Yeah, I just like indoors. Like, I like that it's more compact as a track because it means that you're really close to the stadium the whole time with the audience. I feel like more can go wrong just because there's really tight turns.
Yeah.
You have to think a lot more about your tactics. Like, it's just a kind of, I just find it really fun to mix up the racing element of it. And yeah, even when I was younger, I just remembered I like enjoyed it and did quite well at a lot of indoor events. I also am not afraid to front run. And sometimes that's going to be a bit of a risk when you're outside and you're battling the elements. But in indoor, when that's less of a factor, and when having the inside line is so important because it's just a shorter distance that you have to cover on an indoor track. Like, I like that style of racing. So, I love the indoor season. And then obviously just the first race of this year with Dortmund, where I ran 4:03, that just kicked off like a series of events of going into
and then Birmingham,
other
right?
Exciting. Yeah, and then Birmingham for British Champs.
Yeah,
that was just... It was all just so much fun. That's my memory of it.
Well, that's nice. You can kind of come to it from that place now that it's not, I don't know, the perspective of obviously having a job, which we'll talk about, but like having been out and coming back in, this is all sort of an extra gift or something. Like, there's a sort of extra sort of sense of just being like, wasn't that nice?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's exactly how I feel. And I think the perspective that it brings to racing is so good because I'm not financially reliant on it, because I've kind of had a career / have a career and I'm coming back into it. It is just like, I'm doing running because I really like it. I find it so fun. I go into every race just thinking to grab every opportunity, like not taking anything for granted for coming back for a second time. And I just think that how that translates in races is that I'm not afraid. Like, I'll just go for it and whatever happens.
This is the Runner's World Podcast.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Can we talk about... because a lot of this stuff has happened while you're having a full-time job.
That's why I was late as well. I've also just come off a full-time. I'm still working. Last few days of work, yeah. So I take a sabbatical from May the 1st, but yeah.
Oh, great, okay. Because remember, I can imagine it's been a massive balancing act. Can you give us a sense of, some people listening will be like, yeah, I run a lot of miles and hold on a full-time job, but I think the level you're running at it's exceptional to be able to do both. So how on earth did you fit it in?
Yeah, it has been a lot. My social life is completely gone, I'd say. So I work remotely 95% of the time, which makes a huge difference because I just don't have to do a 2-hour commute every day, which just makes training possible. Mm-hmm. I've just been doing it now for the past year because I've just got into the habit of it, but I am really looking forward to from May 1st, just not having to wake up early. It's a lot of waking up early to get training in work. So that happens a lot. That means also it's a lot of training on my own because people are on a different schedule. It's just a lot of time management, basically.
I bet, yeah. A lot of 5:30 starts to do the running.
Yeah, for the cycling before work, it is those 5:30, 6 a.m. starts. Wow. Really hard to do track sessions before work, but sometimes I've just had to do them on those days. Mm.
Ben's dying to ask about the cycling.
Yeah, so talk about cycling.
Yeah.
So you were back in the UK after America and that's when you got into cycling?
Yeah.
And was it just a pure recreational, this wasn't you wanted to enter races or were you drawn into, it was just you wanted to get out and do something?
Yeah, so it was my fiance is a big cyclist and he was just, I kept getting injured again as I'd been getting injured in the US when I picked my mileage up over a certain amount. And he was like, just get a bike, we'll go out on cycles all the time. Yeah. So I got one for lockdown and then obviously just got really, really into it. Got very into Zwift racing as well. Yeah. And cycling is quite a social thing, as you probably know. So it's meeting up with group people to do group rides. I was just finding that, you can be out on the bike for hours in a way that I'd never be able to do with the run.
Yeah.
And just gaining fitness through that. And then also did a bit of competing with it, not strictly just cycling, but things like the duathlon where you're mixing the two. Yeah. I found that really fun. And then just more of the cycling for fun stuff like the Mallorca 312, climbing Mont Ventoux, stuff like that where it's a big physical challenge. But it's still competitive, but it's different from running, so it just keeps it fresh while contributing to your fitness.
How has it been then, the trend, what do you think the benefits are and what do you think the negatives are between managing, obviously, especially very upright, high performance sprint around 1500 meters versus hunched over on the bike. You're not exactly, coaches must not like it. Hip flexors are not very happy. All these sorts of things.
I was going to say, yeah, the negatives are definitely like the hip flexors are so tight. Like some of the circuit drills we have, like you can tell I'm a cyclist because like I just can't. Yeah, the hip flexors are in a lot of pain. And sometimes I think the benefits are it's just the way how I can keep my mileage low, but then still have a big cardio effort, you know, going through the weeks. So I'll run about 30 miles a week and cycle about 100 is like what my mix usually is. And that just, I think the Zwift racing makes you really fit.
Yeah.
Like, and I also think those Zwift races are so hard.
Yeah, the standards. It's mad sometimes now.
So it's 30 miles a week of running, because that is quite low, isn't it?
It is low.
How do you break that up? Are you doing could you give us a sense of what those runs, how that 30 miles is amassed in terms of like sessions?
So I can talk, it's different when you go into race week and stuff,
but
when you're not racing and just training, what we do with Trevor is we do 4 hard sessions a week. So the thing that works really well for Trevor and me is that he is all about the intensity.
Okay.
And he's not all about the high mileage. So like a lot of other coaches, they'll build fitness through miles and miles and miles. Because I'm quite a low mileage athlete, I can't do that. So like I just won't be able, from the number of stress fractures that I've had in the past, I notice whenever I go over kind of 35, 40 miles, like I will always get problems. So it works really well with Trevor. Like we do a hard track workout, we'll do a hard tempo workout, we'll do some hills, and we'll do like a change pace run.
Okay.
Those kind of variations amongst, you know, we'll also do some fartlek. We'll do, essentially though, like there are...
It's quality work, basically.
Quality work. And then the runs are just super easy, like really slow, low heart rate runs. Mm. Just to recover for sessions.
Anything long? Like what would be the longest run of the week?
Nothing. Like a 10-mile run maybe as part of a fartlek run.
Yeah. Okay, right. Yeah.
But I probably would do that once every 2 weeks.
Okay, right. So interesting, yeah.
Sometimes the sessions can get to 10 miles or 9 miles. You include the warm-up and the warm-down.
Okay,
Does it... Would that be consistent? So building up towards any large event, then would the cycling come down? Would the mileage? I mean, as you say, it doesn't really go much further than 30 miles. But do you have to sort of factor in more intensity and things like that?
Yeah. So coming up to races in general, like depending on when you're wanting to peak, the sessions will get less intense. You know, just so that you're fresher for. Mm. The weekend. I think I'm just conscious as well with cycling this summer because there's so many big races. I don't want to get knocked off my bike in London. So
yes.
I might do more on Zwift and things like that.
That's very good.
As we get closer to it, because that would be very unfortunate. Yeah, unfortunately, it just happens all the time.
I got knocked off my bike a week before London Marathon.
Did you?
Yeah.
And were you able to?
You were going to win as well.
No.
Yeah.
I completely had to have shoulder surgery and all sorts. So I was absolutely...
Oh, my gosh. So
you're right. You're correct into not do that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That would be... I'm sure Trev would not be happy.
No one was happy with that. Yeah.
So then the next focus then is the British trials, right? And then have you dared to think, like, beyond that to, obviously, like, to Paris and stuff? Like, where's your head at this year?
Yeah, I mean, I'm aiming for Paris 100%. So like I've taken approved a sabbatical. So like I'm completely taking off the summer to try and aim for it. I think, you know, Team GB is so stacked. Like there's so much depth. There's so many good British athletes. But I really do think that it is achievable. And, you know, if I go for it and don't make it, then that's fine. But I think I need to go all in and try and make it. So... this summer for the first bit is just going to be all about chasing the Olympic qualifying time. So the first shot at that will be with the Diamond League in Doha in the 10th of May.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to be heading to Oregon for another go at mid-May. And then, it's all about having the best race of your life at British Champs. So if I run the time and I come top two there, you're banked, you're good to go. And then there's that discretionary third spot. But I came fourth at World Indoors Hopefully I'll be selected for Europeans in Rome at the beginning of June and would do well there. So I feel like I've got, things are going well and there's good momentum and I'm just going to throw everything into it. So
great.
Yeah, I haven't just dared to think about it. I think about it all the time.
I bet. But Glasgow was a really great race for you, wasn't it? Like, that fourth was, and then against that sort of stacked field, all the Ethiopian runners and everything like that, it was, and seeing them, I was watching it actually just before we started talking, and that coming down the home straight and just overtaking, you know, there must, that drive to just get there.
Like, yeah,
as a race, how was it?
It was so fun. It was so much fun. Like, I absolutely loved racing there. It was a bit, you know, like bittersweet, like fourth is a tough spot.
Mm.
But because I know I was so close to a medal, but at the same time, it's like my Team GB debut. The Ethiopians and the Americans, or some Ethiopians and some Americans beat me. But, you know, I was really proud of how I raced it and like went for it and, you know, didn't quite end with a medal, but was really close for a first attempt. So it was great, great racing experience and it was really good fun. Yeah.
Okay, we're looking for some advice now, Georgia. this lunchtime, we run as well, do the Runners World 5K. So any 5K running or training advice, and maybe even the mile. I know obviously 1500 is special, but I think mile is probably more applicable to people listening, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd just say, like, if you're trying to get faster, then you just have to have intensity into your training. So I feel like a lot of my friends, they'll be like, oh, I'm not getting any faster. And they're just going for runs and it's kind of like pleasant runs, you know. Mm. So I just feel like need to make sure that at least once a week, but ideally twice, you're doing sessions where you're like gasping for breath. You're really getting your heart rate up. So whether that's doing 1K reps instead of doing, you'd better off doing 5 1K reps than just doing a 5K easy run once a week. Like, that's the sort of thing that you should be fitting into your training. Or same thing if it's a shorter distance over the mile, 1500, like doing 200s as fast as you can, like off short recovery once or twice a week. So yeah, that would just be my advice. Don't just go for runs and hope to see improvements. Make sure that...
It's a shame, isn't it? It's a shame you can't just hack this stuff by going for easy runs.
I was really hoping
you have to work quite hard.
No, such a shame.
Yeah, sorry.
Fair enough.
Is there any draw for you to do like any distance? As you sort of look, you came back doing a park run, you know, 5K has come into the mix. We've got like Night of the 10K PBs and stuff like these big sort of draw events, which are really sort of interesting, different distances for you. But like, have you got any attention, or I mean, probably not this year in the headspace because of Paris, but are you drawn to just trying new things with running?
I am open to it because, I feel like it's nice to know that there are different levels to go to. I think I'm more intrigued by the kind of triathlon, duathlon stuff.
All
like
right.
I think that is more fun for kind of a next phase, because I just think the most fun stuff in running is on the track, like the short stuff, like the 800, the 1500, like the tactical but fast races. Like, they're so much more fun to race and for the spectator to watch than, in my opinion, like a marathon or a 10K. Like, it's
for sure.
Those are not fun to run, I don't think.
Yeah, I think that is true. If people want to find out a bit more about you and your running, Georgia, is there anywhere they can go online to sort of follow your progress?
Yeah, I've got my Instagram, which is like fairly active just with races and things like that. It's called George Bell, the duathlete, which people keep telling me I need to change. More of a track runner now. But it's just George Bell, the duathlete on Instagram. And I just put up loads of stuff about races, training, workouts, the journey, stuff to Paris. So yeah, that would be a good place to go and follow.
Great. Thanks so much for your time and coming on the podcast. It's so great to talk to you about your amazing running journey. And we wish you all the best getting to Paris. And then when you get to Paris, all the best at Paris as
yes.
well.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it, guys.
Thank you. Cheers. So that brings us to the end of this week's Runners World podcast. A huge thanks to our guest, Georgia Bell, and to you, of course, for listening.
Subscribe to the magazine.
All right.
Not you, Rick. You get it for free, you lucky man. But you can get it for near free if you Google Runners World UK subscription, find the Hearst Magazine's website, and go on there and find an offer. The offers are so good, you'll just get like is basically free. Or there's a gift.
As good as free.
Or something good like that.
Yeah.
So please do that. Subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already. Share it amongst your running pals. There might be something useful in there. Not only do we talk to incredible athletes like Georgia Bell, but we talk to physios and coaches and the odd celeb. So you never know what you might get. So yeah, check out the back catalogue if you haven't already. And you'll hear from us again next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.